Welcome to Conscious Curiosity SD, where successful San Diego leaders share their stories of leading beyond profit and are using the influence of business to positively change the companies and communities we all work and live in. I'm your host, Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership. We unlock the power of organizations and teams to overcome tough challenges, seize new opportunities, and turn bold ideas into real-world results through strategic planning, retreats, and team workshops. We want to thank our collaborative community of business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Cause San Diego, and Be Local. We're all focused on impacting our community of San Diego through the work they do as business leaders. Welcome to the show. Today, buckle up, because this is a landmark episode of Conscious Curiosity SD. In the studio, we have two leaders whose vision has sparked a global shift in how business is done. First, Raj Sisodia, a founding member of Conscious Capitalism Movement, distinguished university professor of Conscious Enterprise, and chairman of Conscious Enterprise Center at Tecnologico de Monterrey. His ideas have inspired countless leaders to build businesses that heal, not harm. Raj, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And making his return nearly 90 episodes after the first appearance, Michael Harth, Chief Culture Officer and founder of Laz Parking, the largest private parking company in the country and living, breathing example of conscious leadership. Welcome back to the show, Michael.
Thanks, Jeff. It's good to be back.
I'm very excited to have the two of you in the show here today to talk all things conscious capitalism, talk a little bit about the history, where we're at today, and where things are going, what you guys see out there. So I always like to start with a little bit of a why. You know, people don't just all of a sudden become conscious leaders. Usually something maybe happens along the way. I'd like to start with you, Raj, maybe just for context. Tell us what conscious capitalism is and what's your story? Why did you decide to spend your life leading down this path?
Sure. Well, conscious capitalism is an idea and it's a movement. It's a philosophy of business that differs from the one that is typically taught in business schools and the one that has been practiced by and large for the last 50 years at least, and maybe even longer. It arose around 2007 when my book, Firms of Endearment, came out. So that was my pathway into it. I was a business professor for 20 years at that point, but I was kind of unhappy, unfulfilled, uninspired, kind of disgruntled business professor, you could say. I didn't really buy into the story of business that I had been taught in my MBA and then in my PhD program in business. And it was all about purely profit and shareholder value and using people in order to achieve that. And I realized, looking back, it was all about the head and the wallet. It was all about the numbers, the theories, the frameworks, and then everything has to go to the bottom line. And I realized that you completely bypass the human in between, you know, the heart and the spirit. I was never inspired a single day in my business education, and I was never emotionally moved. Because business can be beautiful, business can be heroic, business can be noble, right? All of those dimensions are left out of that business education. It becomes very cut and dry and kind of uninspiring. So for the first 20 years, I was kind of following my heartbreak. What does that mean? I was noticing the things that my colleagues were not, the way, especially in marketing, right? I was a professor of marketing. And I was looking at how much we were spending in this country. And I did a study in 2004. We were estimating about $1 trillion a year was being spent on ads, coupons, and junk mail, as we call it. And the GDP of India, where I come from, that year was $700 billion. So here, for we were spending more than that for 300 million people. And in India, 1.1 billion people were managing to survive on less than that, you know. And I said, what are we getting for that, for customers, for companies, and for society? And all my research led me to conclude that actually we're not having a positive impact. I had customers, 88% of them do not trust marketing. If it's marketing, that means it's not real, it's not true, right? People have that expression. And we have, you know, overconsumption and the rise of diabetes and obesity and anxiety and all kinds of things. We use women's bodies to sell products. You know, we get kids hooked on junky food and junky cereals and all kinds of stuff, right? So it felt like we're actually not having a positive impact on the quality of life of our customers. And companies were getting low returns on all of that spending, because most ads are never noticed and most coupons are never redeemed. And then society in many ways is being hurt by the culture that was created. So I was always asking, is there a better way? Because I was personally not inspired by what I was doing. I almost had a sense of shame about it. You know, I had an inner dialogue that went something like this, that my father got a PhD in agriculture science because his dream was to cure world hunger. And I got a PhD in marketing and I'm just out here selling more junk to people who don't need it and probably cannot afford it. And so I was almost had a sense of shame. I actually started a book called The Shame of Marketing at one point, you know, a phrase used by Peter Drucker, referring to the consumer movement in America, kind of like Better Business Bureau. We're sitting here, right? It's trying to, So he said the job of marketing is to look after the well-being of customers. And if they have to organize against companies, that means we're not doing our job, right? But I was going to look at all the ways in which marketing is inefficient, ineffective, and unethical very often. And then fortunately, my mentor gave me good advice. He said, Raj, people want to hear about the solution, not the problem. You know, we've been writing about the problem for 10 years. So I turned that around and I called it In Search of Marketing Excellence, which are the companies that don't spend much money on marketing and yet their customers love them and have high loyalty levels of loyalty and trust, because most companies are the opposite. They spend a ton of money on marketing and yet you cannot buy love and you cannot buy trust, right? So that study then led me to discover a set of companies where not only did the customers love them, but so did the employees love them. Those two go together over time. And suppliers were loyal to them and communities embraced them and so forth. So they were really embedded in a stakeholder mindset, you know, way of being. And then I discovered what makes that happen was the sense of higher purpose that aligns all of your stakeholders together. Everybody cares about that purpose. Explicit stakeholder mindset and then conscious leadership and caring culture. So we discovered the tenets of conscious capitalism, in my case, through that book. And then at the end, when we did the financial analysis, we found that these companies had outperformed 9-1 over 10 years, which was a shock to me. Because I said, how can, you know, these companies are not trying to maximize profit, right? And they're paying their people well, sometimes double, like Costco was paying double of Walmart. They're investing in the customer experience. They're paying their suppliers well. They're investing in their local communities. They're investing in the environment. And they're paying taxes at a higher rate, 34% on average. So how can there be more money for investors? Turns out there's a lot more value being created there. So that was the journey for me. And in that process, as I was writing some of the stories of these companies, I literally was in tears. And for the first time, my heart was opened up in my work. And in that instant, I knew that this is my purpose. Because I had been following my heartbreak for the previous 10, 20 years. And now I found my bliss on the other side of that heartbreak. Here's the answer to my heartbreak. Companies that operate with love, with purpose, right? With a sense of collective ownership of the business. And so that then led me to meet John Mackey, the CEO of Whole Foods, one of the companies that I had written about. And then at the end of our day together at dinner, I showed him my mind map for what I was calling the Institute for New Capitalism, or INC, because I have this kind of fetish for acronyms.
You're a marketing guy. You can't help it, right?
Yeah, I got acronyms for everything. And John looked at it and he said, well, that's my vision as well. And I like the phrase conscious capitalism, which I had not heard before. So this was October 2007. This is a phrase actually first used by Muhammad Yunus, who's the creator of the Grameen Bank in Bangladesh, who won a Nobel Prize for his work in alleviating poverty through micro-lending, right? To people who cannot really give any collateral, but you give them a leg up and you know, that gets them going. So anyway, that's how we started. And that was the beginning of the next phase of my life where I was now purpose-driven. I was inspired. I was on fire. I was just like filled with joy and meaning. So that was October of 2008. We had our first conference. And that's been the last 17 years now.
Awesome. How old were you about that time? Is this a midlife crisis sort of scenario?
It kind of is. I mean, my unhappiness predated that. But yeah, I was starting to feel disgruntled, as I said, more so around the age of 40, right? Which is midlife. And then it took me a few years to find my way to the other side.
It's not an easy path sometimes. Yeah. It takes a little bit of work. I like to call it smoldering discontent is what I had.
Yes, and it's quite predictable. I know my co-author, David Wolf, on the Firms of India, and he wrote a lot about the midlife crisis.
Yeah.
And it's a crisis of meaning and purpose. And at some point you realize, wow, is this what life is all about? I mean, I just do more of this for the next 40 years. That doesn't feel very fulfilling. So you start to search for something that is meaningful.
Exactly. Michael, what happened?
What happened?
How'd you end up in this program?
It was kind of an interesting ride. I had started a business in 1981 in San Diego and been in business for 20 plus years. And as my company grew, I started realizing how important culture was to a business. It's not just, you know, what we do, but we like to say how we do it. It was a small valet parking company that literally started with a handful of people in a parking lot in Del Mar. And fast forward after 20 plus years, we had 500 or 600 employees. And we had really a program. We started realizing that our employees, while we had a fair amount of turnover, we also had a need for people to understand who we were and what we were about. So we started doing some work on culture. And as we started progressing, we realized the more we shared kind of our purpose with the business of creating opportunities for people and helping people grow and helping them grow their careers, all of a sudden the company started having a lot more energy. And this just led us to kind of realize that creating values and purpose and a common mission amongst people is really powerful stuff. So as we started working on that, I somehow got hooked up with some local people in San Diego who were part of this conscious capitalism community. I'd never really heard of it, I was intrigued by it. I started going to some local meetings and I started realizing, well, we're kind of like unconscious, conscious capitalists. So there's this movement of like-minded people that we had no idea about. And as I started sharing this with my partners, we were really, really, truly intrigued. So we went to our first Conscious Capitalism Summit in October of 2017. I got to meet Raj and a number of people there. And all of a sudden, you're in this room with 250 people that are like-minded about, to Raj's point, business is much more than a P&L statement. It's much more about, you know, hard facts and driving forward. It's really like, what are we doing here? What is our purpose? Why are we driven to not only grow our businesses, but also to make a difference in the world? And when you take that twist, like we did that kind of, like I said, unconsciously, because having a mission of creating opportunities for people really was our way of saying, we want to help people. We want to lift people up. And it was fuzzy for us at the time. And I think for some businesses, you know, if you don't come from a background like Raj is where you know, understand the theory, you're kind of just doing it because it feels right. And when you get in this room with 250 other people and you start hearing these speakers, you're kind of blown away like, wow, I was isolated. This just felt right. But now I've got this community that I've come home to. And that was really a spark that led Laz Parking to kind of go all in. You know, we wanted to learn more. We didn't want to sit in the sidelines and just show up once a year. We wanted to start to get to know the leaders of the organization. We wanted to start supporting the organization. And I call it kind of my annual reset. I get to be part of this annual kind of reunion and conference. And we've taken so many best practices from the conscious capitalism community and embedded them into the way we run our business now. And so I don't think you can compare a purpose-driven, conscious company to your average company. It's two different mindsets. And sometimes, and Raj can probably speak to this, when you're talking to people that don't quote unquote get it or see it, it's very fuzzy. They don't understand it. But when you get inside it and you see it and you feel it and you live it, it's game-changing on every level, on a business level, on a personal level, on a community level, on a P&L level. It's just super powerful stuff. So I think Raj is the master of architecting what this movement is and helping it grow. And, you know, we have so much respect for him and John and what they've created. And we're kind of like the seedling that was able to get into the fertile soil, so to speak, of it and really
put it into action.
Yeah, it's been very, very powerful for us.
Love that. So speaking of the movement, I mean, you gave us a little bit of an origin story, I guess. And then the book came out, what, like in some like 2013, Conscious Capitalism book. Mm-hmm. And then in 2019, the Business Roundtable, right? The big corporations kind of all of a sudden made some statements that, oh, are these guys starting to get it? Because they started talking about the idea of stakeholders, right? Versus just the shareholders. But here we are in 2025, right? And a lot of it seems like we've taken a bunch of steps forward, but now we might be taking a lot of steps backwards. Can you kind of talk about that? You know, maybe kind of what's happening with the movement and where are we today and what's this all mean to us?
Yeah, we are living in interesting times, to say the least. Yeah, I think what has happened in recent years is a backlash, as you've identified. I think any paradigm shift that happens, in the beginning it's ignored because it's too small, really, and the established order is too powerful. But then when it really starts to gain traction, then it's perceived as a threat to some degree to the established order, which many people want, right? They're comfortable. They've done well under that, right?
So that changed the rules, right?
Yeah, they want that to continue. So I liken it to Star Wars. You know, if you think about the original episodes of Star Wars, the first one was A New Beginning or A Force Awakens in a way, right? That was the awakening of consciousness. And I mark 1989 as a turning point. In Firms of Endearment, we refer to that as the beginning of the age of transcendence. The people were waking up in a very rapid and global way. You know, that was the year that the Berlin Wall came down, right? And suddenly we had the end of that defining debate of the 20th century between these ideologies of capitalism and communism. It was also the year that the World Wide Web was invented. It was the year of the Exxon Valdez oil spill and the awakening of environmental consciousness in many ways. It was the first year that we had more cumulatively women college graduates than men. And that is making a shift in society, bringing more feminine values to the center. And it was also the year that the median age of American adults crossed 40 for the first time. okay, which is, as we talked earlier, the beginning of midlife and often the trigger for a midlife crisis, which is a crisis of meaning and purpose. So more people are starting to now think about life in a deeper way, in a transcendent way, right? So all of these factors were coming together. And if you look at everything that happened in the world from 89, and then the end of apartheid a couple of years later, the collapse of the Soviet Union, the birth of all of these new democracies, etc., gay rights increasing and women's rights and so many things. I mean, we were really going through quite a renaissance in many ways. So that was the force awakens, the awakening of consciousness on a mass scale. But what happens, there's always episode two, which is the empire strikes back, right? And there's a lot of that change. You know, human beings find it hard to absorb a lot of change in a short period of time. You know, so there's a backlash. It could be predicted in some ways. I think we're in the midst of that right now. There are people who would rather keep the status quo. You know, they've got this nostalgia for a golden age that never was, really. You know, going back to some perceived idea of so-called greatness. And so I think we're dealing with that right now, but there's always episode three, which is the return of the Jedi.
Okay. All right. The final chapter.
Well, there's, you know, life beyond that too. But I think, joking aside, I think we have to stay committed to these principles. These are important. They're not just nice to have. These are necessary things in our world today. Business as usual is not an option. You know, it got us here. It's not going to get us into the future where we need to go. The ways in which we've created all of that prosperity, which has been tremendous, right? We've done so much through capitalism in the last 200 years, especially the last 100 years. But that is not going to be sustainable in the future. We cannot do it the same way. We have to reinvent how we do everything, right? Certainly from an environmental standpoint, climate change, we've got species extinction, right? We have massive income inequality. We've got political unrest. You know, we've got the rise of many public health crises, obesity, diabetes, autoimmune, cancer, heart disease, so many things, right? So we have to change. And without conscious business, we don't have a future. So the sense of importance and urgency is even greater today. Now, this is the decade of two things. It's the decade of consequences. We are now feeling the consequences of the way in which we have lived and created prosperity in the last 100 years, the chemicals that we have put into the environment, into our bodies. The average newborn baby now has 187 known carcinogens in their cord blood, right? I mean, there's all kinds of 45% of Americans will get cancer in their lifetime. This is the decade of consequences. We are now facing up climate change, you know, sea levels rising, all of that. It is also the decade of determination. What is going to happen to our future on this planet? A lot depends on what we do in the next 5 years. We have to make some fundamental shifts. So even though we're facing these headwinds, we have to double down. This is a time for moral courage, moral clarity, standing up and being counted, and not bowing down to these short-term pressures. And that's really when I think consciousness is called for and this awakening has to continue.
Right. Capitalism's brought a lot of great things, right? And but also a lot of unintended consequences that we're dealing with today that, yeah.
Yeah, now that we're aware of those consequences, now, you know, once you know, you cannot go back. You cannot continue doing something once you know the consequences.
Exactly, exactly. So you're talking about change. We are definitely in a time of change. I mean, we got AI on the corner here that, you know, we think is going to really change mega things around here. We got biotechnology, we got geopolitical issues, we got all kinds of stuff going on. So as a business leader running a conscious company, what does that look like for you, Michael? How do you go about this differently than maybe the other guys out there?
You know, I think, again, it comes back to purpose and what's under your control. Every year at LAS, we create an annual theme. And a couple of years ago, pre this last election, we were kind of looking ahead. We meet every fall and kind of plan out our next year. And we were looking at, you know, to Raj's point, all this turmoil in the world and things that were going on and the contentiousness internally. And, you know, we started coming up with all these different ideas for what our annual theme could be for actually 2024. And through that discussion, we were like, okay, there's a fair amount of anxiety in the world right now. There's a fair amount of probably more anxiety amongst our workforce and the world, you know, the general population in the US than ever before. What can we do that kind of speaks to that and aligns us? And we came up with this theme called Pay It Forward. And that was really the genesis of saying, you can come to work, you can be safe here, you can be part of a family here, and we can collectively do things together to make this a better place to work, a better place to be, a better place to live. And it was like some of our themes are more powerful than others, but this just blew up because people could relate to, yeah, with all this craziness in the world, I am associated every day with this theme of What can I do for my clients? What can I do for my coworkers? What can I do for my community? What can I do for myself? And I think a lot of that kind of is rooted back into this conscious behaviors around you can make a difference and our company can make a difference. And people want to belong, you know, back to kind of the Maslow, you know, safety, belonging, and purpose. And that tied right into it. You know, you're safe here. We can do good things together. You're part of a community that belongs with one another. You can feel that sense of belonging. And together, as crazy as the world is, we're going to make a difference. And that year, we did some remarkable things. We energized the Lazarus Charitable Foundation. We gave away $2 million. We built schools. We just some amazing things that we could look back and go, you know what? We made a difference. And, you know, I like to say, is the world better off every year because Lazarus Parking was in it? Part of that we measure by our growth and creating opportunities. Part of it we measure, you know, by the number of dollars we've given away. We measure it by the number of volunteer hours. We measure it by just the overall growth of the company. So I think you can take these principles and you can bring them into your business. You have to leverage them and match them to what makes sense for you at the time. But I think that would be an example of the trickle down of this mindset.
Love that. I'm actually a living example because I'm actually working with Lazarus Parking. So I, through my wife who runs a nonprofit in Pacific Beach, we have a social enterprise where we hire some of the unhoused folks in our neighborhood. Mm-hmm. It's a program where they get about 20 hours of work a week. And then we have a case manager to help them get through the issues that help them off the street. And it's about a 9-month, 12-month kind of program. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually running the morning shift where we have a contract with the local town to basically empty the trash cans and pick up the streets. And one day I'm looking at one of the parking lots and I see some guys over there cleaning this stuff. And I'm like, wait a minute, how come we're not cleaning these? So I reached out to Michael and said, hey, I got an idea. Can you put my guys to work on your parking lots? And we put 4th of July weekend, we started working for Laz on a contract basis here to put my guys to work, make some money and keep our community clean. So really appreciate that. So that's an example of we got parking lots and they need to be cleaned. And here's a community group that's trying to do something and marry those two things together. So
beautiful.
That's conscious capitalism in action right there. I want to talk a little bit about, and you're a professor, the next generation. So one of the big moves we're trying to make here in the San Diego Conscious Capitalism chapter is an internship program we're doing with USD. We're about to start year 3. It's been a growing opportunity. Prebis, a local philanthropy group here, actually gave us a big donation to help support this whole thing. So let's talk about conscious capitalism next generation. What does this look like? What can we be doing to really bring up the next generation of leaders? What role can we be playing?
Yeah, I think it's extremely important. You know, if you look at the young generations, the last 2 or 3, you know, millennials and beyond, right, Gen X, et cetera, they are simultaneously the most purpose-driven generations we've ever had. At a young age, like our generation, it was midlife, right, when some of us came purpose-driven. I think for the younger generations, it's much earlier. You know, maybe quarter, it's not a midlife crisis, it's a quarter-life crisis or even earlier. They grew up with a great awareness of the big challenges that the world faces and a determination to try to be part of the solution. So they're idealistic, they are purpose-driven, and they're highly intelligent. So one of the shocking statistics is something called the Flynn effect. James Flynn documented the rise of IQ over the last 80, 90 years that we've been measuring intelligence, analytical intelligence, right? That's just one kind of intelligence. But that data gets normalized to 100 every 10 years, so it always you can compare yourself to where you are. But if you look at the raw data over the last 8 decades or so, it's been increasing at 3.5% to 4% a decade. Okay, so cumulatively, if you compound that over 8 decades, the average person today who would have, by definition, an IQ of 100 compared to today, 80 years ago, their IQ would have been 137 compared to the people at that time, right? They would be in the top 2% of intelligence. They would be considered almost a genius. Mm. And that's the average person today, right? They haven't been able to explain why this is happening so rapidly. Genetic evolution normally takes millennia. This is happening within decades, right? Rapid increase in human intelligence. So people are highly educated, highly intelligent, highly purpose-driven, and idealistic, okay? The other side of it, however, is that they're the most cynical generation when it comes to business. In fact, a few years ago, economists did a survey of American youth 18 to 29 and found the majority of them think that socialism would be better than capitalism. Now, we know socialism doesn't work. And tried 38 times, never successfully. I grew up in a democratic socialist country in India. Before India opened up to the world in 1990, but in the 70s, it was completely controlled by the government and government produced many products and services, and it was terrible. You know, nothing worked well at all. And so socialism doesn't work, but young people have this idealism and they have seen the downside of capitalism in many ways. Right? They've seen what we've done to the climate or other species. Right? They've seen their parents struggle with burnout and stress-related health conditions and all of that. So they've become very, very cynical about business. And that's a huge challenge. So I taught in a summer camp program for high school youth some years ago. 40 kids from all over the country were part of this summer experience on leadership, entrepreneurship, and ethics, I think, were the three dimensions. So sustainability, actually. And I did a session on conscious capitalism. And at the end of that, I asked them, how many of you intend to go into business? Out of the 40, not a single hand went up. And I said, oh, what are you going to do? I said, we want to start a nonprofit. We want to solve the water problem. We want to solve the homelessness problem. I said, that's wonderful that you want to solve real problems. That's what business is about. But business is about finding profitable solutions to the problems that we have. So can you solve the same problem but do it in the context of a business? Because then you will be self-sustaining and scalable. You won't rely on donations and subsidies. But it speaks to that mindset that people have, that businesses are selfish and greedy, because that's the story we've told of business, right? Greed is good and greed makes the world go around, and business is only about profit maximization and self-interest is all that matters. And if you do that, somehow it'll be okay for society. That story does not inspire anybody, especially the young people. And at the same time, they see nonprofits as virtuous and good. Right? So there's a wall between those. Right? Business selfish and greedy and therefore evil, and where nonprofits are virtuous and good. I'm a good person, therefore I'm going to go to nonprofits. Now, if everybody goes to nonprofits, our society won't function. So I think it's a question of us inspiring the young people to say business can be noble, business can be beautiful, business can be heroic. Right? And it is. Right? Business can do all of those things. I mean, you look at the impact Laz is having, and so many of these conscious companies are having, not only for their shareholders, but for their employees and the children of their employees and for their communities and for their customers and everybody, right? You're elevating society and people's lives. So that's the story we have to inspire young people with. And once we do that, as I said, their innate capabilities are so strong, right? In terms of all the things I talked about earlier, that they're going to be able to come up with solutions, but they have to be inspired first. And that's our job, to inspire them. And then I think the most idealistic people in society should go into business. Today, it's the opposite. The least idealistic, the most mercenary in some ways, the most money-driven people are the ones who go to business school. And I did a survey once when I was teaching at Bentley, and we surveyed the entire 1,000 incoming class, their views about business and how they felt about their decision to go to business school. And in many ways, they were settling. Their friends were out there pursuing their passions and dreams, and these guys would say, okay, I'll be an accountant because I know I'll get a job, right? And then we did a 90-minute session on conscious capitalism, and then we surveyed them again. And now there's excitement. Wow, I'm actually not just settling. I'm part of an institution that is going to actually solve the problems and make a difference, right? So we can shift, but we, you know, that story hasn't been told adequately, and that's what really we're about. So I'm delighted to hear what you're doing here with USD.
Yeah, it's one of the challenges, I think. I mean, you take something like the nonprofit, and they've got this lofty goal as a mission, right? It's like on the wall. We all get that. Then you have like Laz parking. Well, we park cars, right? What's lofty about that? But how you run the business and how you're treating the people and everything else, that's what makes the difference. And I think that gets lost sometimes. There's other ways to identify purpose that makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. When I hear Raj explain it the way he just did, it's really just enlightening. People think, oh, I'm going to get a job. I'm going to work for a company. They're going to make money. I'm going to be a cog in the wheel. But when you enlighten them that, you know, this business is not just about making money. Yes, we like to say no profit, no party. We have to make money. Businesses have to make money or they won't exist. But when the center of the focus is around the purpose and the money becomes the result of living the purpose, it's a complete paradigm shift. And all of a sudden people start realizing, wow, I can have both. It's like, yes, anybody who works for a company wants to be paid fairly. They want to have upward mobility in the company. They want to grow. And of course, as a company, you want to give people that, and you can be making a difference. And when you can match those things together, like our retention rate amongst our salary staff is 86%. And at the upper levels, you know, the top, say, 300-400 people in the company, it's 95%. People don't leave because you're ticking the boxes of meeting their needs. And we all hear stories about people who, you know, love the money, but hate their job. And that's a miserable way to live. You should have both.
I think it's kind of an atrocity, actually, right? Mm-hmm. The statistics are, you know, 80% of people don't find work meaningful. This thing you do spend the majority of your time doing, you don't find meaning. I mean, that's awful.
Yeah.
So you're hiring lots of people a lot, Michael. What do you see with the kind of the next generations coming in? And how can conscious capitalism affect that?
You know, I would say we're a little bit of tale of two cities and a combination of both. And when I say that, we've got a lot of hourly employees. We're up to 20,000 employees. And, you know, the vast majority, probably 80% are hourly employees. And in some cases, they're hourly employees who are going to stay with us for a long period of time. And in many cases, they're hourly employees who are going to come, they're going to work for us while they're going to school or they're at a point in their lives where, you know, they're working towards something else. A percentage of those employees, and we like to see that grow, will decide, hey, we like this company. It's a cool company. You know, we kind of get what they're about. And then they grow their careers with us. So in that sense, we see our responsibility to create a company and a support system to say, if you want to make this a career, we're going to give you the path to do it. And we put a lot of money into our learning and development. We literally have tens of thousands of courses taken amongst our employees across the company every year. And we have programs to develop leaders because we need to fuel our growth as well with new leaders. So that's kind of on the hourly side. Our responsibility is to help people grow. On the salaried side and the full-time side, you know, we're committed to their long-term growth and kind of the pay it forward theme of you should be out there looking for these people within the hourly population or the newer population and mentor them and bring them up. So, you know, it kind of comes full circle for us of connecting with our people. And again, back to the pay it forward theme, creating opportunities and helping people. It's just kind of a cycle that we work through. And our retention rates have gone up, which then, you know, back to Raj's point, if you're a conscious company, you perform better. Well, if our turnover is lower, we're obviously going to be more profitable because the cost to hire is always a thing that you're trying to control. We've also found that with this mindset, our industry is shifting in many ways. Technology is getting very important. The way customers are parking and where our clients are expecting their customers to approach our facilities and get in and out of the facilities. They want more of what we call a frictionless system where you can just drive in and out and it automatically pays you. You pay by phone. So there's all these shifts that are going on in our industry. And so because of that, we are finding that some of the expertise that we have, we can develop ourselves, but we also need to start attracting outside talent that has more knowledge in that area. And because of our reputation, because of the buzz of who Laz is and what we're doing, we're attracting incredible talent, like mind-blowing talent from the industry, within the industry and around our industry. And again, therein speaks to being affiliated as a conscious company, having a higher purpose, having a great culture, living our values, walking the walk. We just, I don't want to say we have handpicked, but we can be very selective about choosing from the best of the best. And that's another unintended consequence that we would have never really seen. So it all comes together. And this is part of like my new word today, Raj, is enlightenment. You know, how do we enlighten people in the communities, in the universities, in the younger generation to start realizing you don't have to start an NGO. Laz, we adopt NGOs. I just got back from Africa, spending 8 days in Ghana and Togo, sitting in the school we built, you know, watching the artisans who we've helped support move from total poverty to prosperity. That's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, for sure.
And again, no profit, no party. If you have the profit, you can throw some pretty good parties.
So you're saying that reminds me, I invited the management team from Laz to come to one of my team meetings to meet my team. So we all did these self-introductions, right? And five people from your organization showed up and everyone was like, came kind of from the bottom up. Yeah, I was parking cars. Now I'm a manager. And it was just kind of 17 years with the company, right? It was just this whole litany of like, we're going, wow, look at this, right? And to your point, they've adopted us, right? So here we are with totally. This, you know, this nonprofits doing this thing. And it's like, they've come out and they've now adopted us as a program. So yeah, it's awesome.
I could just mention something. You know, I love what Laz has done and what they stand for and how they prove the case that conscious capitalism is not just for Whole Foods and Patagonia and, you know, those kinds of brands. Some people think it's a luxury good that only applies to those kinds of businesses. You know, if you can do it in parking, you know, you can do it anywhere, right? So I think it's a beautiful test case. And we're writing a second edition of Conscious Capitalism right now, revising it. So I want to make sure I'm going to pull in some stories from Laz in there, you know, just because it expands the possibility horizon for people to say anybody can do this. Any industry doesn't matter. Any size of company doesn't matter. You can be conscious and you will see the difference.
And I'm going to say too, you can't just sit around and say, I'm waiting for the big boss to go do this. If you're running a project team or you're in a department, you can run your department this way, right? Yeah. You can adopt these same concepts within your sphere of responsibility. So you don't have to wait for someone else to do it. You can do this now.
You don't need permission to care and you can create an island of consciousness. Now, is that going to spread and impact the whole company? You know, that depends on the receptivity of people and how they're leading it. But certainly you can make a difference in your span of care.
And I would say, by the way, on a career level, if you embrace it and you learn it and you use it, you're going to be seen as a better leader and it's going to catapult your career. So individually, especially for, you know, students or younger people, like if you get to know this and you learn it and you bring it in, people are going to notice, hey, this person's showing up a little bit differently. We're getting different results from their group. What are they doing?
Exactly.
And if your company is not responsive to, you know, help you grow it within your organization, then you should find an organization that's receptive to it.
I had a project management company for many years and I come in to turn around projects. My first question, what's the bigger story? What are you really trying to do here, right? I know you want to make more money with this project, but what's the bigger story? I was always trying to enroll everybody and it, you know, works like magic. Local chapter. What's the role of the local chapter in conscious capitalism? We're here in San Diego. We got a chapter here. We're trying to really bring this thing around. What's our role? What should we be doing here? How do we have an impact locally?
Well, you know, we started the chapter initiative way back when we used to have these annual events and people would come and they would be on such an emotional and spiritual high. I mean, it's just joyful to be in those conferences. And then they would leave and they say, I want to continue this. And how can I create that? So I think we went to Chicago first. And then Australia were our first two, first domestic and first international chapter. The idea is just to coalesce that local community, right? Because they are unconscious, conscious capitalists everywhere. And there are others who are conscious in the sense that they're aware of what they're doing with this language. And so really coalescing that so that people can learn, because there's no end to consciousness. It's not like you're either conscious or you're not conscious, right? There's degrees and everybody's on the journey. And there's no end point. There's no limit. Limit to consciousness is to become divine, right?
There you go. I mean, fully enlightened. Right? Back and to the enlightenment.
And there's no limit to conscious businesses. And you can become a healing organization and you can, you know, do so much more. So being on that journey together, recognizing that you're not alone. A lot of people come to the Conscious Capitalism Conference and say, oh my God, I've been wandering in the desert thinking I was weird. And you know, most of the other people in business don't think like this, right? So you find your tribe and you know there's strength in that. And then it's all constant learning from each other. So creating that community, growing that community, spreading awareness, being on that learning journey, having that growth mindset, right? Providing opportunities now, you know, the ideas are bubbling up, like the internship program that you have here. You know, one of the most exciting chapters we have is Brazil. So Brazil has 11, there's a national chapter in Sao Paulo, but now there are chapters in all major cities in Brazil. And they've got, you know, like a dozen new initiatives that they're doing, working with high school kids, working with college kids, with entrepreneurs, with big companies, even working in the favelas, the slums. They visited the second largest favela in Sao Paulo, and they've been working with Conscious Capitalism, the chapter there, in order to give hope and a future to these people who are living in these slums. And they've actually seeded like a dozen new businesses that are operating within that particular favela, which are now creating services for the people who live there who are often deprived of many things because of where they live and, you know, they can't get deliveries, they can't receive packages from Amazon, etc. So they created a way for that to happen. They've created all kinds of other businesses in there as well and giving people a future, right? So there's no limit again. And we really believe in innovation that bubbles up. It's not a top-down process. So chapters have a lot of freedom and then chapters learn from each other and say, what could we be doing? So I think we're in the process of revitalizing our chapter network as well because that's really the living heart of conscious capitalism.
It's the point of local collaboration, right? Yeah. What can we do together?
Yeah.
You can go to the national event, but then everybody's going to say hike and off they go, right? But locally, right, you're going to be seeing each other working in the same community and the opportunity to collaborate. That's where it happens at the chapter level.
Yeah.
Any thoughts, Michael?
Yeah. You know, first of all, I believe in San Diego, this internship program has been a fundamental game changer because it's brought some focus to our local chapter. And I think it addresses two things. One is this shift that Raj talks about of this new generation that thinking maybe, you know, capitalism is not a good thing. I think it's a, back to the word enlightened, it can enlighten people on what capitalism can be. But I also think it now drives value for the businesses in San Diego that wanted to be part of conscious capitalism. Sometimes, you know, at the chapter level, it's been a little esoteric. You know, you get people together and you talk about the tenants and, you know, you have these feel-good meetings, but then they leave and they go back and they have to run their business and they're busy and they don't get the real value. Like for me, when I went to the annual meeting and I started networking at these conferences and getting ideas and bringing it back to my company, I kind of had this upward spiral of value of my connection to conscious capitalism and Laz's connection. But on the local level, sometimes we didn't have those same resources. So it was a little hard to quote unquote see the light. So So I think a combination of having a value-driven proposition at the local level in San Diego with this internship program, having companies now, there's companies like Labs, we can get interns at no cost to us that are paid internships for the interns and the students on meaningful projects that enlighten them on conscious capitalism and also elevate our ability to be conscious capitalists. I mean, that's a 1+1=3 right there. And then for the companies, you know, to start realizing in our community that that's something they can do. That's a real value add. Hopefully that becomes more of a value proposition foundation for our chapter. And then I think from there, you know, you also want to just attract like-minded people so you can have a local community to support each other, to share ideas and not be out in the cold and say, you know, we're the only ones that think this way, because having a community of thought leadership within a community is really valuable. And it's been a little bit of a challenge to try to get that to stick. But I think we're really on a strong path now.
It's a call to action, right? Sitting here in this podcast room, we've had over 90 guests in here. And I'm always amazed someone shows up and they're doing some amazing things, but they tend to be in a silo. So I think the opportunity is, how do we start to collaborate, and having something we can call people to, that's how we start to create the collaboration. So I think it's going to be really, really powerful. Looking forward to that.
And I love that there's a local podcast that people can learn about each other from that. I think every chapter, I would encourage them to do this, you know.
A lot of fun.
It'd be great.
Let's go do it.
Yeah. We need to clone you, Jeff.
Well, I need to put a bow on this, guys. I'd like to end with, what's the one big idea? So if people didn't remember anything, what's the one thought you'd like them to remember? So whoever wants to go first, go for it.
I think I should go first, because Raj will have a much profound, better
answer. He's the closer. Yeah, I love it.
He's got to be the closer. For me, the big idea is conscious capitalism is not just a philosophy. It's a way of running a business. And it is, to my mind, the most powerful idea you can bring into a business, because it aligns everything through the company. And when purpose becomes the driver of all your decisions, this higher purpose, everything can line up behind it. So, you know, my challenge to listeners would be to, you know, you need to run your business. It needs to survive. I've been in the trenches where it's day to day. You're just trying to get through another day. But if you do take the time to step back and say, why am I doing this? What are my real motivators? How am I and my people and our company going to make an impact? And it doesn't mean if you're building widgets, you have to build the best widget. It could be the best company building that widget. It could be the best group of people that are making a difference in the world. It could be, how do we create new opportunities for all our stakeholders and elevate, you know, back to the conscious capitalism kind of tagline, elevate humanity. This is a very challenging time. And I think all of us, if we really think through that, can show up in a way that's much more profound than just trying to get through another day of business. That's where I would leave you.
Love that. Put the pressure on you, Raj. That was pretty good.
Well, what I would like to leave our listeners with is the idea of love. That every single thing we do in our life should come from a place of love. Every action, every word. Even the hardest things that we have to do, if we have to let somebody go at our business, can we do it with love? And that changes everything. And business can become a way to scale love and care into the world. You know, I find that in traditional business, a lot of decisions are rooted in fear and often in greed. It's always about growing because we want to grow, and it just isn't, you know, it's never enough. Can we replace that? Make the same decisions, but from a place of love. And love is embedded throughout our pillars of conscious capitalism, right? Our purpose is an expression of our love into the world. You know, it's, what is love? It's the unconditional desire for the well-being of the other, right? And we have that. We are wired to care as human beings. And somehow we've been educated to believe that, well, that is something you do at home, and work is you put on your mask and armor and you go to battle, right? Fight in the marketplace. No, why can't we love what we do and love the people we work with? Right? And love the people we serve, right? So bringing that, the most powerful of human energies, into, so purpose is an expression of love. Stakeholder mindset is basically us caring for every single stakeholder. Everybody matters. Everybody needs to win. If somebody's being hurt in the process, we're not there. Our leaders have to be rooted in love. We have to be strong and loving. Strength without love is tyranny. Love without strength is ineffective. So you have to be strong and loving, like Lincoln, Gandhi, Mandela, King were all very strong humans and very loving. Leaders who are only strong, like Hitler and Mao and Mussolini and Stalin, I mean, they almost destroyed human civilization, right? And then our culture is one of trust and caring. And that's the biggest difference, right? We're bringing in the heart and we are inspiring people. So I would leave our listeners with that. Remember and remind yourself all through the day, am I coming from love right now? And what does that mean? And how will that change what I do and how I show up?
Wow. Appreciate you two guys. It's guys like you that are making this world a great place. So thank you very much. Thanks for taking the time. I know you're very busy guys. You came all the way down from Orange County just to be on the podcast and hang out with us guys down in San Diego. So thank you, Raj. Really appreciate that. And Michael, it's always great to see you. So with that, that's our show for the day. And if you enjoyed it, please subscribe, comment, and most importantly, share the podcast with a friend. Again, special thanks to our collaborative community of San Diego business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Be Local, and Cause San Diego. We're all using the influence of business to positively impact our very own community of San Diego. I'm Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership saying, till next time, go do what you do. Go do what you do best, where we're all counting on you.